Instinct, emotion, rationality. These are the, what I call the three basics of how you work, how the mind works. How the mind does what it does, this kind of thing. And this is not necessarily a scientific explanation. This is just, we could say that some of this comes from science, some insights that I've gained from understanding the brain. Some of it's also come from understanding ourselves and our animal natures. Some of this comes from understanding what is actually going on when we're making decisions. You know, I've talked about some of this already, about how rationality, when you are actually rational, when you think that you're rational, your rationality is actually justifying the emotional decision that you already made, right? So what we're going to be trying to do in this episode is going to be going into this, and it's hopefully a clear, definable way. And it starts with these three basics: instinct, emotion, rationality. What is the most fundamental thing that you have? Instinct. Instinct is like breath, right? Breathing. You don't need to control your own breathing. Breathing is just something that happens. You know, the sex instinct, the survival instinct. Like if you're hungry, or your hunger or your starvation or whatever is an instinct, you'll search for food at that point, right? Or you'll, if you have it, you'll eat it. It's like a natural instinct. You know, if you have pain, you will attempt to avoid the pain, or you will attempt to stop or fix the pain. You will attempt to find pleasure if possible, right? If you have a desire, you will try to fulfill this desire. These are kind of what I'd call instinctual drives. Now, we can talk about, well, not everybody fulfills every desire, right? Like, well, that comes down to rationality and emotions, which we'll get into, right? So emotion, what is an emotion? What does emotion have to do with decision making? What does it mean to use your emotions to make decisions? And truth is you can't make decisions without emotion. It's impossible. If you are unemotional, completely unemotional, about something, you won't make a decision about it, because it's not, it's got to be one of those things where you're going to make a decision, but you're going to, it's going to be one of those things where you're not going to make decisions, because you're, the reason why you make decisions is because of your emotions. Even if you are feeling very little at the time, there's still some emotional content there that is making, that is helping you to make certain decisions. That's how emotions work. There's other things that emotions do as well, how they work, what they do. You know, social. There is a a lot of social bonding that comes with emotions and emotional expressions. Oh, yeah, we know that this person is angry if he makes this expression. That tells people that know, maybe you should stay away from this person or whatever it is, right? And then the last one, which is the one that follows all the other ones, is rationality. Your story about your emotions. Your rationality attempts to justify why you made that decision. So, like, for instance, to give an example of how those can kind of work in practice, you have an instinct to feel a certain desire, an instinct for social bonding or whatever it is. And so emotionally, you engage with people and this kind of thing. And so rationality, if that fails or whatever, and you get angry, rationally you might rationalize it away, or you might like rationalize it towards yourself. And what that means is, like, you might rationalizing it away means like, oh, you know, this, that means that person was just not for me and he was just a bad person or whatever. Rationalizing it toward you could be like, oh, how dare this person do this? Like, I'm a good person, you know, this kind of thing. This is how the mind works. This is what the mind does. This is how it makes decisions. And it's kind of funny to me how much faith people have in rationality. Like, oh, facts don't care about your feelings, and your feelings are unimportant, this kind of thing. And what you really realize is that this is not the case at all. I found during my years of studying the mind and myself and others and stuff like this, is that this is not how you work. Your rationality is controlled by your emotions. This is just facts. And the sooner you realize this, the better off you're going to be. And this has multiple consequences for you in life, because there is, you know, if I were to tell you some unpleasant truths about yourself or the world or whatever it is, and you wanted to be an optimist about the world, have this grand vision about how the world could be united in this particular way, this particular time, this kind of way, this kind of thing, you would probably get very triggered very quickly, because you have these naive visions about how the world could be or should be or needs to be or whatever it is. That just won't probably ever come to pass, to be honest with you. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, how much uncomfortability are you willing to take in this kind of thing? How much disagreement is too much disagreement? You know, it is true that we are social bonding creatures, but only to a certain extent, right? Like, eventually, this only goes so far until something happens, or unless survival is at stake, like literal survival, like food is scarce and resources are scarce and, you know, this kind of stuff. And this is why you had to become very aware of your emotions and become very aware of your biases. And to me, what's really interesting about a lot of this as well is that because of the this nature, it's very hard to actually see things that are counter to what you believe and what you are assuming about the world and this kind of thing. Now, this is especially true if your emotions, your rationalities about your emotions contribute to your sense of self. And then I tell you, like, oh, well, your visions of the world, your naive visions of the world are naive. You know, they're not going to be something that happened in real life. And you'll be like, how dare you? This is triggering to me and this kind of thing. Especially nowadays, it's becoming very clear to me that this is unsurprising at all. This is happening. What's surprising is how much time it actually took to get to this level, to be honest with you. It took so long to get us to this level that we're at in discourse. But this is where we're at right now. Your emotions control your rationality. It doesn't happen the opposite way. Your rationality doesn't control your emotions. It just doesn't work that way. And this is why truth is uncomfortable. Truth is always going to be uncomfortable. If you are one of those people who is like, oh, I search for the truth, I know the truth, and that truth doesn't make you uncomfortable, then odds are you're not actually seeking the truth. The odds are you're not even seeing necessarily all of the truth. Or even most of it, because you can't see all of it anyways. The odds are you're only seeing certain parts of it, you know, certain parts that fit your narrative. So your instinct for to fulfill desires will take a certain mindset, right? And so your emotions come into play. And these emotions, they'll say, like, oh, well, the world should be this way, and it should be a Christian nation, or it should be this kind of nation, or whatever it is, right? And then you rationalize it by saying, well, this is why, 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 this kind of thing. Until you finally justify it in your own mind. Like, now you've justified it. Now, if somebody tries to unjustify it, perhaps even rightly, you go, how dare you, right? And this is the response. This is why. Because your rationalizations, your rationality is justifying your emotional position. You could also use the triad of opinion, emotional investment, and rationality. The opinion is this is wrong, or this is, you know, true, and this is false, or whatever it is, right? And your emotional investment is wrapped up in that opinion, and then your justification, or what you could call your rationalization, is, oh, this is wrong for this reason, this reason, this reason. Your rationalities come last as a result of these other two positions, these other two responses that happen first. And because that's the case, because that's what's happening, you're not going to want to be uncomfortable unless it serves you to be uncomfortable in certain ways. Like, if you're, you know, it's funny people talk about uncomfortability. It's something I thought about as well at times. And I've really come to understand that, like, you can be uncomfortable only to a certain point and certain levels. And eventually what's going to happen is that you're going to rebel against becoming too uncomfortable. If the truth is too uncomfortable, you're not going to want to see it. That's just life. That's just how your mind is wired. Because if you were to seek out uncomfortability, to a certain extent, that is necessary because, like, it may be uncomfortable to hunt. It might take a long time. It might take a long year. You know, not a year, but it may take you days to do this, but it's worth doing after it. But if you're hunting for, like, say, 5 days and you haven't gotten anywhere, you know, this becomes too uncomfortable. Now you fail, basically, and now you have to return back to the nest or whatever. And so your comfortability margins may differ based on what you're doing in life. But there's only so far you can go with that until you eventually reach this level where somebody points you past a point of no return. You go, how dare you believe this? And you start becoming triggered and you start to, you know, demonize this person in your mind, which now justifies the position, whatever it is. This is what uncomfortability is. This is what it means to be uncomfortable. To be uncomfortable is to literally realize things that you may not personally agree with or even believe, but may even be true nonetheless. And maybe that means that you have a vision of the world that is not a positive one. Because the vision is showing you all of these things about the world that are true. Maybe they're exaggerated, maybe that's a possibility. But they're showing you the reality of the world. And, you know, whatever they become aware of when it comes to the supposed reality of the world is the reality of the world is a lot messier than your story of it. So what that means basically is, like, you have, like, let's say you're reading a book, let's say, like, a Harry Potter book or whatever book it is that you're reading, some story. Maybe it's a magical world. Maybe it's not a magical world. Doesn't matter. Typically speaking, with a book, endings are wrapped up in a bow. They're usually pretty, like, unambiguous. They're pretty easy to follow and it kind of creates its own, it kind of has a grand narrative, so to speak, and it basically is unfractured as a narrative, right? The narrative is very clear, the connections to the narrative and the people are very clear, maybe not at first, but eventually, right? But in reality, that's not how reality works. Reality is a lot more messy in that way. There's not as much of that narrative connection, but because that narrative connection is how the mind works, what you could call rationality, you try to make reality into this That's one example. This is why reality is messy. And non-reality and stories, the clues are like right there. You might have to hunt for them a little bit, but they're like right there. Like you can almost tell right there what's going to happen if you kind of know what you're looking at and if you know what you're looking for and this kind of thing. But in reality, the clues aren't like this at all. The puzzle is kind of like everywhere. Like, I have some pieces, you have some pieces, some other people have some pieces, but those pieces are scattered all over the place and they're not in the right orders. And there's, if you try to put the puzzle together with other people, like there's missing pieces and there's pieces that just don't fit for whatever reason. That's reality. Reality is messy, right? But that goes counterintuitive to our construction of the world. Because our construction of the world is not based on the world. It's based on the story that we have about the world. And of the story of the world as well. Like, if I drink coffee, I'm going to get hyper, right? But coffee doesn't always affect people in the same ways. If I eat sugary snacks, I'm going to get a sugar rush. People say that. It's not actually true, but that's what people think, right? Because the hyperactivity of eating sugars make people seem like the sugar is causing the sugar rush, when it's actually not true. But anyways, that's what I'm talking about. Reality is a lot more messy in that way. Like, it's not 1 + 1 = 2. Sometimes it's like 1 + 1 = 17. You're like, how is that? How is 1 + 1 = 17 in this way? It's really strange, right? It's because of this force called entropy. And entropy is a scientific word, but I also think you could use it in a philosophical sense as well. And in a sort of practical sense as well, that's less scientific, but still is pretty useful. And entropy is basically that the more things exist, the more they become disordered, the less order they create. You know, with stories in a book or in a novel, there's a lot of order. There's no real disorder. There might be like chaos and disorder in the world, but the story has a very deep order. It has a very put together narrative. But that's not how reality is. Reality isn't quite like this, except in our own minds of reality. And I was going to do that as a separate episode, that whole point that I just made, but I think I just made that point pretty accurately right there. And so, yeah, like, this is what it is. This is what it means to be uncomfortable. Like, but because if you are told that, if you listen to that, you're like, oh, well, that doesn't seem to vibe with what I've seen about reality. Well, what you've seen about reality is you trying to glue the world together through your story. And the story isn't always like, oh, this is bad, and this is bad, and this is wrong, and I'm wrong, and this is wrong, and this is right, and this is right, and this kind of thing. It could be that, and it could be putting things together in that way as well, but it's also like, this is how things work, and this is why, and this is how things work, and this is, you know, this kind of thing. There's all kinds of things that's going on there. And it tries to weave everything together in a solid, order-like mass, but that's not reality at all. Reality is disorder, it's chaotic. And so if you try to understand reality, what you're using to understand reality is the story. That's what the story is. And so the story, your story, whatever that story is when people say like, oh, it has to do with like your decision making, your emotions and stuff like this. But that's not completely true. I mean, that's part of it, but it's so much more than that. Like that, it creates the worldviews of the world that you have. You know, your story is going to be attempting to make sense of things, which is normal, right? Which is fine. But when you realize that reality is going to be more messy and less sensible in the typical senses of that word, you're going to realize that you attempting to make sense of things is not going to be very useful. It's useful. It's not unuseful. But it's not going to be as correct as it may seem. You know, that's the beauty of conspiracy theories. You know, why do you think people believe in conspiracy theories so much? It's because they take this, the form of this order-like nature of stories. Like, oh, this person here and this person here and this group here, they're all colluding with each other to control the world in this way and this way and this way. And this is why this is happening. And this is why that's happening. Like, everything's falling into place in this sort of ordered story and an ordered narrative. It's all clear. It's all there. It's right in front of you. Or at least that's what it seems like. But that's not how reality is. Reality is messy. It's hidden behind the scenes, behind curtains that you're not aware of usually. And your mind is the same way. This is why personality theories don't really work very well, because personality theories and typologies themselves are themselves ordered stories, but that's not what your mind is. The mind isn't as ordered in this way. There's only one real system that I think that really works very well is the Big Five system. Some people call it OCEAN, you know, openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. Even spiral dynamics doesn't really fall into this very well either. Even though I think it's a little bit more useful than some of these other typology systems, but I think even spiral dynamics has this problem in different ways. In the same way, actually, but in different contexts. Because it's not... Because oftentimes what I find when people who... You know, like if you're... Oftentimes what I find with people in general is that they're not always going to be falling into one particular stage or another. They're like overlapping. You know, oftentimes too, what I've noticed as well is there are actions that people take that don't even really fall into any of those stages at all. They're like different in some way. Either because you can't see the motivation behind what they did or some other reason, right? And so, while typologies and personality typing, it can be kind of useful for you if you find it to be correct. What you need to realize is that this is not how your mind works. Your mind is not some ordered personality where it's like, oh, if you are this if you have this particular typology, this is how you are all of the time, right? This is not how you are. This is not how the mind works. This is not how reality works, even. And this takes many forms. Like, to give an example, a simple example, and this is not going to be me being skeptical of climate change, but, like, this is a good example, right? Because people tell you, like, oh, with climate change, like, the temperature is going to go up, and it's going to be more, it's going to be hotter and hotter and hotter, this kind of thing. But, and that sounds very simple in concept, until you realize, like, well, what about things like the urban heat island effect? Do you know what the urban heat island effect even is, right? How does that also create climate change? Is that muddling up the numbers that are controlling climate change, right? Things like this, this is why these kinds of concepts aren't as simple as they seem in the beginning. The urban heat island effect, by the way, is this idea that, like, in urban environments and city environments, it's typically hotter than in country environments because a lot of trees are no longer there. Like, the pavement is very hot, and so it heats up the area in general, right? And so if you're trying to equate, or if you're trying to make sense of climate change, what is actually affecting the climate, you have to account for this kind of thing. And that's not as simple as it may seem. This is what I mean by reality is more messy than it seems. But for those who are really, really believe in climate change, they'd be like, oh, how dare you? Are you a climate change denier? No, I'm a climate change reality maker. Like, I'm a person who's like, well, it may be true. It probably is true, to be honest with you. I'm not going to deny that it isn't true, but there is this to understand about this as well. Like, how much is that controlling this and things like this? Doesn't mean climate change doesn't exist. It just means that it's not as simple as your little models and theories make it seem. Because reality is chaotic. You know, some people might be like, well, reality has rules. It has rules and, like, scientific rules and laws and this kind of thing, right? Well, that may be true in some ways, but that does not discount this point. Actually, in some ways, it is counted as one of these points when it comes to entropy and things like this. And chaos theory and different forms like this. This is where reality and philosophy differ. In your philosophical systems and theorems, everything is ordered. Everything is simple. Oh, this is what causes this. This is why. This is what you do. This is why. This kind of thing. But that's not how reality works. Is it helpful information? Maybe. But maybe not. That's reality right there. It's messy. It's uncomfortable to become aware of that, though, because your story is telling you something different. And to become aware of this means to distrust the story, which is difficult to do because you're emotionally invested in your particular story.
to give any like an example, I went way long with that example, but like that's a perfect example of this. Because that's really one of the main reasons why theories just don't necessarily add up in the real world. And that's what most of politics is, honestly. Most of politics is trying to create this idea of the ordered world. Like, oh, this is a bad problem because of this and this and this. It's like, well, I mean, that's true, but there's also things involved here and this kind of stuff. Spirituality is the same thing, right? Psychology, same thing. Anything, same thing. Let's see here. Yeah, this went a bit rambly, actually. It was going to be an episode about instinct, emotion, and rationality, and how those two connect. I guess it's not off topic, because it is one of the reasons how this works. Of course, you could say the same thing about, like, my arguments and this kind of thing as well. Different arguments especially as well. But with this argument, there's a little bit of wiggle room in saying, well, it could be done in different ways, but your emotions, your instincts, your emotions is going to be co-opting your rationality. That's just facts. The sooner you understand and accept that, the better off you're going to be. In the story as well, like, something negative happens. The sooner you realize that those negative things are going to happen, the better off you're going to be. The more you're going to be able to expect things that are unexpected. Of course, that's not always going to be a possibility either. Sometimes things are just going to come that are unexpected, but I think you can still do this. You can expect things that you previously unexpected. Like, you expect that you're going to suffer. You're going to be in pain. Emotional pain, physical pain, doesn't matter. Expect this is going to happen one day, especially if you get older, physical pain is going to be a thing. You know, expect that your ideas of the world are just not going to match up with the world, with reality as it is. That's just a thing that's going to happen. Expect that your uncomfortability is going to keep you from really realizing something. That's facts. That's just how your mind works. You know, expect that your dreamy idealism about how the world is or should be or needs to be is just not going to happen in real life. That's facts right there. That's just true. And I don't mean to be saying this as in being a dick. Like, I'm like, oh, how dare you believe such things? But as, like, I'm becoming aware of these naive ideas about how the world is or could be or should be or needs to be, I realize, like, oh, well, that's just not going to happen. I mean, how many times have people predicted things that never happened? How many times have people said something that just never really came to be? This kind of thing. Not to mention the nature of the human mind to begin with. accept the fact that we are animals, and that changes how we see ourselves and changes what we do as a result. That's just facts. That's just reality right there. But that's not fun. That's not pleasant. It's going to be difficult. It's uncomfortable. You know, for those who are concerned about climate change, expect that people are going to stick with things that work. Coal, oil. Because a lot of these green technologies, while they may seem wonderful and useful, they're not as effective and efficient as these forms of energy creation. Those are just facts. That's just something that we know. That's China has literally told people this. You may disagree, but that's what I'm talking about. Your mind is not based on reality. It's based on your emotional investment in the story. Do I get disagreed? Do I think we should have more green technologies? Probably, perhaps, but we should not expect that this is just going to happen, because it's probably not. You know, the more that I've looked at reality in general, I just realized that reality is unpleasant. It's going to be unpleasant. Because reality is human ingenuity, right? Human survival needs certain things to work. Especially work at its optimal state. But reality isn't always going to be giving you those things. You know, the system that we have is wonderful. This new system that we've been basically dealing with for 70 years now is wonderful. Where really wars have been becoming less and less of a thing. In a lot of ways, I mean, there's still a lot of problems in the world, don't get me wrong, but wars have actually been going down, violence has been going down, until moderately recently because of COVID and different things like this, but I think that's starting to change, unfortunately. The order of 70 years of moderate peace is gone. I don't think that's going to be a thing that lasts, is going to be lasting much longer. This is not meant to be a downer to people like, oh no. Like, this is just becoming aware of and taking into account real life as it actually is. Not as we wish it to be, or not as our truth or our story says it should be or is, but how it actually is. But that's difficult, because to do that is to destroy the validity of the story within yourself, which is something that your emotions, your mind is not going to want to do. But it is what it is. Anyways, I'll talk to you on the next episode.